Now, on this Invest Talk podcast, Justin Klein listens to your questions.
Now, we have a live caller from Hawaii. It's Danny asking about PLBY, which is Playboy.
I was just wondering what you think. It seems like it's on the run lately, but wondering what's maybe a price to get in at.
And provides unbiased answers.
Yeah, this is actually a name that we own for clients. We've owned it for about a month now.
Invest Talk. Over 30 million downloads and counting.
I had a question with interest rate being so low on savings accounts. I was thinking about moving some cash to high dividend ETFs.
Your participation makes it unique. 888-99-CHART.
This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our Thursday, March 18th, 2021 edition of Invest Talk. I appreciate you all tuning in for this hour. I'm excited to help guide you into making better investment and money decisions. And I'm going to operate this hour with our usual mission statement, which is independent thinking and shared success, right? I'm not Kramer. I'm not pushing a book. I'm here to help you and bring you along in our success. Now, whether I'm bringing you market reports, stock commentary, process explanations, whatever it is, I'm going to do it all without bias. I'm here to give you the facts as I see them in front of me and based on my nearly two decades of market experience. Now, I'm Justin Klein, and of course, we encourage you to contact us with your finance and investment questions. When you give us a call, you shape the show to your liking, and likely the questions you have will probably help somebody else. So not only are you helping yourself, you're helping others as well, and that feels good, right? So you can call right now during our live stream program, 4 to 5 Pacific time, or leave your question anytime in our Invest Talk voice bank. Either way, that number is always 888-99-CHART. So let's get right to the first question now.
Hi, this is Josh calling from Buffalo, New York. Love the show. And I have a question regarding AEGN, which is Aegean. And they are getting acquired and the remainder of their shares purchased by New Mountain Capital. I'm not sure kind of what this is going to do to the stock. It's seemingly flatlined over the past week, just kind of going sideways. And wanted to get your thoughts on what this means and how the stock will likely react to this in the future. Thanks so much. Listen on the show. Have a good one.
Well, they're being acquired. So that's really it. They're being bought by, what is it, New Mountain Capital? Is that a private equity or is that a SPAC? New Mountain Capital. Yeah, it looks like a finance company, closed-end, non-diversified investment management company. So this is what they do. They go out there and they buy companies like this. So I'd have to look at the deal. Sometimes it's a all cash deal. Sometimes it's part equity, part cash. I'd have to dig into that. But yeah, let me look at this. They announced an agreement to increase the consideration payable to $27 a share in cash and from $26 a share in cash. Okay. So they already upped that a bit, and you've seen that in the price, right? It's flatlining right around 26, and then they had the deal up to 27. It spiked to about 29. Maybe that was expecting someone else to come in, because if after the deal, the same company is saying, okay, we'll pay another dollar a share, what that likely means is Aegean has other suitors saying, hey, we could get more, and negotiating with New Mountain, and the market was pricing that by pushing it up to $29 a share. There's still that possibility, though, that this deal falls through and it actually is sold for a higher amount, maybe $28, $29, $30 a share. So be cognizant of that. But right now it's trading at $27.69. Most likely, you're going to get $27 a share. So it's going to maybe vacillate here between $27 and maybe $30 on the top end until the deal is finalized, because until the deal is final, there's always the potential for either the deal to fall through or for someone else to swoop in and offer a higher amount. So don't expect a lot of movement. It will probably find a steady trading amount around that $27 range, because most likely that's where it's going to close, but things can change. So it's in cash. You're not going to get shares. If you own the stock, you're going to get the cash that the New Mountain is going to pay for this name. So this is how buyouts work within the market. There's always potential for it to fall through or to be upped. Now, why am I doing this podcast? Well, I know that you need help. You need resources that give you the facts to help guide you towards your own version of financial freedom, and that's with good sound money decisions as well as effective strategies to help deal with the market that's in front of you. There's always uncertainty, but you can't let that stop you from making good decisions and finding the right opportunities for you. That's why I'm ready right now to take your calls on our InvestTalk listener line at 888-99-CHART. Let's check on the market today. It was a solid down day, and the big reason, 10-year spiked up, closed at 1.73%, the highest level since 2000, and let's see, is that 19? Yeah, late 2000, yeah, I guess it was early 2020, it was still there. But we've definitely done a round trip over the past year plus on the 10-year. The 30-year hit a high of 240, almost 2.5. Above or right at the 200-week moving average. That is the highest since summer of 2019. So higher rates are spooking the market, especially the growth side of the market. I've talked about that. As long as interest rates continue to rise, this is going to hurt growth, tech. I know I sound kind of probably like a broken record to you, but do you see that today? Higher rates, much, much weaker NASDAQ and growth side of the market versus the value side. Value side still down, but look at the difference here. Large cap growth was down 3.21%. Large cap value was only down 0.46%. It's about 2.75 difference in performance on just one day. And so these companies are trading at high multiples. They're coming back in. Now you've seen that. You look at Friday, my reports on our YouTube channel. I showed you. S&P was making new highs. NASDAQ was making a lower high. It couldn't even get above the tiny little bounce that you got in late February. Continues to make lower highs. And I expect it to make lower lows as well. It's looking very weak. So the big question is, while there's a lot of overvaluation in that disruptive side of the market, quote unquote, there's still a good amount of value in the cyclical names, industrials, commodities, financials. Now, I do think the commodity trade is getting a little ahead of itself, and you're likely to see a little weakness here in the near term, especially because the dollar is getting a little bit of a lift. But the Fed meeting yesterday, market didn't really love that. They didn't step in front of the increase in rates. They're still very wishy-washy on what acceptable levels of inflation are. They say, well, they're going to average it over time, but over what length of time to try to meet that 2% target? So they're accepting higher than 2% inflation. But does that mean 2.5? Does that mean 3? What does that mean exactly? And they did not hint at yield curve control. So that's why you saw rates up. And so the market is, the Fed is a reactionary body. They don't tend to get ahead of things. And so that's why you saw rates up, dollar up a bit, and you're seeing the markets coming down a bit. And we're into quadruple witching tomorrow. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein, and we're almost through the third trading week of March. And this year, and this quarter, it does seem like it's moving fast. We're only a couple weeks away from the end of the month, end of the quarter. And that's why we are here to help you develop effective strategies in order to reach your goal of financial freedom. So we're taking your calls live at 888-99-CHART.
Steve and Justin have recorded a special bonus podcast. It's a fast-paced learning podcast for the average investor. It's free, so be sure to tell your friends. It can be downloaded now at iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and investtalk.com. Look for Rapid Fire Hour.
And my focus point today concerns this question. Can you retire as a millionaire by using index funds? And this article is more about saving than it is about investing. Certainly, people can use index funds. I think they're flawed in certain ways. But if you want a low maintenance way to invest and you just get returns, they can be fine. But the main point here is, at what age until retirement, or how many years until retirement, are you starting your savings to get to that $1 million mark? That's the chart that is most important to me. Now, if you're 40 years away from retirement, let's say you're 25. I'm going to use 65 as your standard, but that's probably going to rise over the number of years as life expectancy goes up. People are healthier when they hit that age, etc. But we're just going to use 65 as standard. So if you're 25, you need to save $420 a month to get to $1 million by the age of 65. That's it, $420 a month. Most people can do that, especially with inflation going up, wages likely to go up over time. Shouldn't be that hard. This is static until the age of 65. Now, if you have 35 years of retirement, say you're 30, you need $600. This is starting at zero. If you're 30, you need $880 a month. Sorry, 30 years away, so 35. Now, as you get closer, it starts to ramp up here. 25 years away from retirement, at the age of 40, if you haven't saved anything, you need to save $1,320 per month to get to that $1 million mark. 20 years from retirement, you need $2,000. 15, you need $3,300 a month. And 10 years, let's say you don't save anything until the age of 55, you just start saving, you need to save $6,000 a month. So the instructive thing here isn't about index funds. Whether you use them or not is more of a preference of how much time you want to put in, what type of strategy you want to deploy, etc. But it goes back to the most important factor when it comes to being successful in the investment world, in the savings world, in the financial freedom goal. And that is saving consistently. That's why 401ks are so impactful. They automatically make you save. In fact, I believe there's a bill that's going through Congress right now, Steve and I were talking about this morning, where it automatically opts employees into their 401k at a 3% deferral, meaning forces them to sign up for a 3% deferral of their paycheck into a 401k. And it auto-escalates 1% annually up to 10%. So it creates kind of a standard path towards that 10% annually put into your 401k. Now, you can opt out of it. That's the preface on this, which is, I think, good. There's a good book out there. I think it was the Economist's Book of the Year in 2011, I believe. It's called Nudge. And talks about this, kind of a libertarian mindset where you have the freedom, but putting the systems in place to nudge people to the right decision. It's kind of like when you have the calorie count on the menu of your fast food restaurant. You can order whatever you want, but it's kind of nudging you, hey, you should probably go with the lower calorie things. Same type of thing. But that automatic savings is very important, and those figures show you exactly why. It's important to start early and be consistent. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein, and for investors, the need to remain vigilant never ends. So naturally, you have questions, and that's why I remind you now that you can call our 24-hour listener line and leave your question on our voice bank system, and Steve and I will provide unbiased answers on a future podcast. And now your participation is vital to the mix of this show, so we're taking your calls live here, 4 to 5 Pacific time, at 888-99-CHART.
Markets react to uncertainty. Are you prepared? Is your portfolio balanced? Is it optimized? Your financial future depends on the answers to those questions. Justin Klein is here now and ready to talk with you. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, I had a question about a company called H2O Innovation, H-E-O-F-F. I look forward to hearing it on the podcast. Thank you. Bye-bye.
This is a Canadian company, and they are in the water treatment solutions business. So they sell filtration technology to municipal, energy, and natural resource end users. And it's a relatively small company. If you look at their market cap, $161 million market cap revenues, $106 million trailing 12 months. EBITDA, only $6 million trailing 12 months. So not a ton of profitability there, roughly 6% EBITDA margins. Return on equity, return on assets, longer term, have vacillated from positive to negative. Their balance sheet doesn't look terribly bad, so that's good. Their recent performance of the company has definitely improved from a cash flow and earnings perspective. However, my issue is that over the last decade or so, they went public back in 2000 and it looks like 11. They had 12 million shares outstanding then. Today, they have 84 million shares outstanding. And certainly revenue's gone up. Operating cash flow has gone up and is now decently positive. But their profitability metrics have been relatively weak, and they continue to issue more shares. The chart, I will say the chart does look fairly bullish on a daily, but it doesn't get me excited, to be honest with you. I would really have to understand their technology, what's driving their recent boost in their performance of their business. Is it anything to do with the pandemic? Is it transitory? Do they develop a new technology that is better than others within the industry? You know, they're so small that I haven't really done any work. So I'd really have to see something about their product suite that has changed over the last year or so that maybe will give it higher than historic profitability levels. And until I see that, it just doesn't get me juiced up. So I'm going to pass on it. I don't like how many shares they've issued over the last decade, and their business performance is kind of eh. Now, we have a bit of a backlog of voice bank questions, and I don't want them to become stale. So today, we'll devote more time to voice bank calls. This came in earlier at 888-99-CHART.
Hey, guys. Long-time listener here. I had a question with interest rates being so low on savings accounts. I was thinking about moving some cash to high-dividend ETFs and wanted to get your thoughts on HDV, Harry David Victor. Looking forward to your thoughts. Thanks.
All right, looking at ETF HDV, and this is the iShares Core High Dividend ETF. So you're going to get a nicer dividend, right? 3.8% is the current yield. Problem is, you're looking at very different levels of risk. And so many people make this mistake. And they look at just the yield. And they say, well, this yields more and this yields less. And they see, well, that's more attractive because it's a higher yield. And certainly that can be so. But you are investing in, you're comparing apples to oranges here. High yield savings account right now is probably yielding 0.5%. This is yielding 3%, almost 4%. And it's on the value side. Typically, dividend investing is tilted towards value type stocks. The problem with this is you're focusing on high dividend yields, and that can be good. But high dividend yields also typically means higher than average risk. Why? Because a lot of those companies have a lot of debt many times. Now, if you look at the top 10 holdings, they're all relatively fine. You have Exxon, AT&T, Chevron, Johnson & Johnson, Verizon, Procter & Gamble, Pfizer, Cisco, Coke, and Merck. Those are the top 10 holdings. All very solid companies. So I like that mix. But understand the volatility. Just because they're bigger blue chip names and they have less volatility than most stocks or the market as a whole, doesn't mean that there is no volatility. Go back just simply last year. And what did this ETF do during the March timeframe? It fell from 95 all the way to the low of 61 and change. So don't confuse the two as similar types of opportunities. One is equity exposure, and no matter what type of equity exposure it is, no matter if it's the biggest blue chip dividend paying company there is, which I listed those top 10 and those are in that mix, they're still high risk. It's still high risk. If you were in all equities, you are taking high risk. Is there higher risk? Sure. But putting it in a savings account, FDIC savings account yielding 0.5% is very, very different. The risk level is drastically different than something like this. Now, if you're willing to take the risk, you're willing to ride that out over the longer term, this is a definitely better vehicle. You're going to make more over time. If you need that money in the near term, say to buy a house or pay off another debt, whatever that is, don't be taking that risk. But longer term, this is a solid one, solid fund, and should do fairly well. On the next Invest Talk, this story. U.S. jobless claims rise to 770,000 with layoffs still high. And Steve will get to that story tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein, ready to take your calls live at 888-99-CHART.
I'm in my early 20s, and I'm thinking of doing something that every article I read says not to.
I noticed it took quite a fall.
Yes, I know it's extremely risky.
I have a little mixed feelings about this stock.
And I wanted to see if this could be a riskier payoff in the long run.
For the unprepared investor, market volatility around the world demonstrates risk.
It remains a very, very tough business.
But opportunities wait for no one. And now may be the best time in years to invest wisely.
We got a lot of things cooking out there that the market has to think about.
To invest strategically.
We've moved very far, very fast. It needs to consolidate.
KPP Financial Principals Steve Peasley and Justin Klein host a unique weekday finance and investment program and podcast, Invest Talk. Listen live or download the free podcast.
You are listening to Invest Talk. Every Friday on the program and the podcast, Steve Peasley shares highlights from the newest edition of the KPP Premium Newsletter. Listen Fridays to Invest Talk. And now, Steve and Justin welcome your calls and questions. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Brady out of Indiana calling about ticker CNHI. I actually farm. We use Red Equipment. They're a company that is engaged in design, production, marketing, sale, financing of agriculture, construction, commercial vehicles, and the such. Just thinking, we talked about the great rotation from tech to industrial, then looking at it from the finance side with rises possibly in interest rates coming up. I do have a small portion of these shares looking to add. Just wondered where you think the company's headed long term. Thanks for the call.
All right, looking at CNH Industries, and this is a company that's domiciled out of the UK, And if you look at their product range, it's they have agriculture equipment, construction equipment, commercial vehicles, powertrain components. It's incorporated in the Netherlands, Principal office is in London. 42% of manufacturing revenue generated from the agricultural equipment side, 8% from construction, and 36% from commercial vehicles. So kind of broadly diversified there. $24 billion in revenue last year. Are expected to earn about $1 a share next year. Not this year, 81 cents a share this year. Trading at almost $16 a share. Based on forward earnings, that's not too expensive. Let's look at their free cash flow. Trailing 12 months, about $2.26 a share. That's good, based on $15 a share currently trading. Last year's profitability was hit, but if you look over the last decade or so, their return on equity has averaged and in the high teens, which I like. Let's look at their balance sheet. Balance sheet is a little levered there. They do have a decent amount of debt, $26 billion on $21 billion market cap. That's relatively high, so I worry a bit about that. Enterprise value to EBITDA, 28. So if you're looking based on market cap, the cash flow is pretty cheap. But enterprise value, remember, enterprise value is adding the market cap plus the debt on its balance sheet. Remember, enterprise value is addressing the total amount it would cost to buy out the equity holders and pay off the debt holders. Because that's important. How much debt a company has is extremely important when you're valuing a company. And if you're only looking at market cap, you're completely ignoring the debt load. And that's very important. So if you base it on enterprise value, it's not that cheap anymore. Trading at 28 times. Historically, this is traded closer to 12 to 15 times enterprise value to EBITDA. So it's getting a little stretched for me, but that EBITDA will likely bounce back, because if you're looking trailing 2 months, it's about $1.34 billion. Typically that was closer to 3 or 4. If you get back to trend, maybe that valuation comes down. So you really have to look forward here. I like this overall because of the space that it's in and its historical profitability. So if it gets back to those levels, which I don't see why it wouldn't if the world gets back to normal, I'm going to give it a thumbs up. Thanks for the call. Now we're on a roll. Let's keep it going. The next Invest Talk caller question came in earlier from Oregon.
Hey, Steve and Justin. This is Dylan checking in from Oregon. One piece of my portfolio is TAP. I've got a half a position right now. That's Coors, Molson Coors. Just wondering if I should start rounding it out and buying more, or if I should kind of get rid of it. I'm up a little bit with that one. I've been holding it for a little while. Just wanted to get your thoughts. Thanks, guys.
All right, looking at TAP, Molson Coors. This is the fifth largest beer producer globally. It's second here in the U.S., Canada, and many Central European markets. Has brands like Blue Moon, Coors, Miller Lite, Vizzy, etc. It also owns Dos Equis in Canada, has a licensing arrangement with Heineken, has Corona. So many very good brands. Now, if you look at the price performance, even pre-pandemic, hasn't been that hot. It's been struggling. Its high was back in 2016, around $110 a share. Now we're at $49. So that worries me. Free cash flow is pretty good, but I don't like the overall trends. So I'm going to pass on it. Long-term profitability is high single digits, not high enough for me. Even if it gets back to that, it's going to be eh. So while I like the cash flow, I don't like that lower level of profitability that it's been sustaining for the last decade plus. So if I'm getting in the alcohol industry, this is not at the top of my list, and it's probably not in the top five, so I'm going to pass on it. Now we have a live caller from Hawaii. It's Danny asking about PLBY, which is Playboy.
Hey, Justin, how's it going today?
Doing well. Do you own it or looking to buy
it? I'm looking to maybe start a position in this. I've been seeing a lot of chatter lately about the sexual wellness kind of sector, part of the health sector as well. And I heard that Playboy has recently kind of transitioned to a pleasure for all mentality and not so much just men's entertainment. So I was just wondering what you think. It seems like it's on the run lately, but wondering what's maybe a price to get in at.
Yeah, this is actually a name that we own for clients. We've owned it for about a month now. We bought it a few days before it de-SPAC'd. Mm-hmm. It was a SPAC, and now it's just a normal traded company. And the reason that we bought it around the $12 to $13 range. That's where we picked it up a lot of it. Now it's surged over the past week or so to $17.05.
Yeah.
So it's been good for us. And we continue to like it on any pullbacks. I think it could pull back to 15, 14, 15. I think that would be a great buy point area. But our thesis has less to do with simply sexual wellness or anything like that. And that's certainly a part of their strategy. But the Playboy brand is the third most recognized brand in the world, especially in Asia. It's very popular. And when Hugh was alive, Hugh Hefner, it was kind of a brand that wasn't well run. It was his personal piggy bank. He was having fun with his Playboys in the mansion and everything. But he's passed now. But the status and the recognizability of that brand remains. And it's now run by legitimate operators that understand consumer brands. And they are using that brand to license in multiple areas, from gaming to leisure to hospitality to I think they're even launching a CBD, probably a cannabis line. So they have a lot of plans for their own brands as well as licensing, and licensing margins are very, very high. So based on what they project for just a few years from now, 2024, 2025, this is trading at like 1x revenue, expected revenue 3 or 4 years from now. And it shouldn't be. It should be trading much higher than that. So we're big fans of it. I like it. And they don't really have the magazine anymore. It's not really what this company is. They don't have a nude magazine. So while they do have publications, they're no longer nude. They're more your standard men's magazine. And it's more about the lifestyle brand. And that's why we like it. And that's why I think it's a great buy, even after this recent surge. But, you know, market's starting to get a little volatile. I could see a pullback into that 14, 15 area. Thanks for the call, Danny. Now, I'm Justin Klein. You're listening to Invest Talk. And it is now official. We've crossed the 30 million download mark in the history of Invest Talk. And we appreciate all of our fans all across the world. We thank you for downloading Invest Talk, for telling your friends and family about all of our financial and investing podcasts. Please keep the calls, questions, and messages coming in. And remember, you can head over to our website, investtalk.com. There's a great number of resources available to assist you with your goal of building a solid financial future. If you're unsure where to start, I suggest you take the Riskalyze questionnaire, which will help define your investment comfort zone. And of course, you're welcome to call our KPP Financial Offices in Irvine, California at 800-557-5461. We would love to help you. But for now, our phone lines are open at 888-99-CHART.
There is good news for loyal InvestTalk listeners, their friends, and families. Steve and Justin have recorded a special bonus podcast. This free podcast is available for download anytime. Typically, each day and night, the InvestTalk call center receives more voicemail questions than Steve and Justin can fit into a live show format.
So in the bonus program, caller questions will be played back from our voice bank and answered with brief, unbiased, and helpful responses. The first segment of the Rapid Fire Hour is hosted by Justin Klein, and Steve Peasley handles the second half. It's a fast-paced learning podcast for the average investor. It's free, so be sure to tell your friends. It can be downloaded now at iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and investtalk.com. Look for Rapid Fire Hour.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Lenny from Los Angeles, a longtime listener, first-time caller. Thank you for the show. I'm calling about two different ways of getting into copper, and I'm wondering if you can compare them. Tell me what you think is better, or maybe they're both good ways of getting in, and what you think about the appropriate price points. The first is an ETF, or I think ETN, JJC, iPath Series B Bloomberg Copper Sub-Index, tracking the metal. And the other is FCX, Freeport McMoRan. Thank you very much, and I'll listen on the show.
Now, what you are comparing are, I would say, different types of apples. Maybe not apples to oranges, but different types of apples. One would be exposure to the raw commodity. And that exposure is in the form of derivatives, typically. And that is what you're investing in inside the copper ETN, JJC. And that is an expense ratio because iPath is managing that as 0.45%. That is a lower risk way to go, but it's also lower potential return. When it comes to any commodity, maybe not any, but the vast majority of commodities, we much rather own the underlying producer of that commodity. Why? Well, in simple terms, operating leverage. And I use gold as always a good example. The average gold miner cost of getting gold out of the ground is roughly $1,000 an ounce. It's actually $950, but let's use $1,000 for round numbers to be conservative. At $200 or $1,200 an ounce for gold, their profit on average is $200 per ounce. Let's say prices go from $1,200 to $1,800. They're roughly around there now. That's a 33% increase in the price of gold, right, from $1,200 to $1,800. But their profits went from $200 to $800. It went up 400%. And that is the same for a lot of these commodity, most of these commodity producers. The price goes up, their cost to take it out of the ground or to mine it or however they're acquiring it typically doesn't change that much. And so their profits explode. And you look at FCX here. It was down around $4 back in March. Now it's at $35. JJC at the bottom, same time frame. It was trading at 32. Now it's at 61. So still great return, but you can see that huge explosion in the price of Freeport versus a JJC. Now, if you're wrong, JJC will go down less. If you get in at the wrong time, there's going to be less risk there, downside risk with a JJC. But if you're right, wouldn't you rather have your thesis play out with much bigger returns? I would. So I like FCX. I do think the copper market and commodities in general have gotten a little ahead of themselves, to be honest with you. And we're entering a more consolidative period where you're going to get a lot of backing and filling and pullbacks that I do think should be bought. But understand that that can mean a lot of volatility, especially for a name like FCX. So now it's trading at 35. My target's around 25 is where I would like to get in. But that is the big difference between those two different types of opportunities. Now, we have a caller on hold, but for now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein, and we have one goal here, and that's to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And we're heading into our final break. So our work continues after this. So get your questions in now. We only have a few minutes left. So if you're going to call during this live hour, do it right now at 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Steve or Justin?
I think there's likely a pullback here in the offing.
Now is a good time to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
For investors, the goal of achieving financial freedom requires unbiased information, strategic planning, and determination. Congratulations! You've found the podcast that is dedicated to helping you succeed. InvestTalk. Steve and Justin welcome your questions anytime on the InvestTalk listener line. 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Portland and talk with Heather. She's asking about financial planners. Heather, you there?
Yeah. Hi. So I'm calling for my daughter. She's looking for a new financial planner. She's 22, and she's about to be commissioned in the Air Force.
Okay.
So she... you know, she doesn't have a whole lot of money to invest, but is just getting started. And the financial advisor that she's been talking with is commission-based. Mm-hmm. And so I was trying to find out, like, what the difference is between a commission-based and a fee-based planner.
Sure. Well... typically, the difference is that a commission-based planner is going to try to get her into some type of commission product, whether it's a mutual fund or an annuity or a whole life or universal life policy, some way that they can make their commission. And that's a problem typically because that creates conflicts of interest. Doesn't mean that their advice is necessarily bad, but it can be colored, unfortunately. A financial advisor like us, we're a registered investment advisor. We manage money for a fee, a quarterly fee, and we are fiduciaries, meaning we have to act in the best interest of our clients. A broker does not have to do that. Someone who's commission-based does not have to do that. It just has to be appropriately, the product has to be appropriate for that particular client. The hard thing for her is that if she doesn't have a lot of money, then the minimums for, say, an RIA typically are pretty high, $100,000 plus. Broker, you know, they can make enough commissions. Problem is that they're not really going to have her best interest at heart, most likely. For right now, because she's so young, does she really need one? I think that is the question. Does she really need there are fine savings vehicles that she doesn't need a financial planner. There are retirement calculators, but she's 22. So really, it's more about just save. Using a robo-advisor is probably not the worst thing when she has such little money. When her situation becomes more complex, sure, 5-10 years from now, she amasses a decent amount of money, then maybe hire something like that. But I think right now it's more on focusing on saving and saving in a tax-efficient way, but that's more of a CPA question. So having a good CPA is where she should probably start and focus on saving consistently. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Georgia and talk with Julie. She's looking at Volkswagen.
Hey, Justin. So I managed to get out of a Story EV stock unscathed, barely. And so I'm looking for a little more exposure. And I know Volkswagen seems to be leading the pack of well-known automobile manufacturers, and of course I was thinking about buying it last week, and it was significantly less than it is today, and I just wondered if you thought Volkswagen was a good thing to buy at all, or is, you know, is this too high at this point, or you know, what you think.
Well, it did go parabolic yesterday, up 20% or so, gave a lot of that back today. And I just simply think that is a product of that excess and is probably going to enter somewhat of a consolidation period. And I like it on that pullback. Anything in that around that $30 mark, I think, is still a good buy. Any dip into the 20s, I really like it. So especially if you're comparing it to a company like Tesla, they're about to outsell. They expect to outsell Tesla this year in number of units. And they're actually profitable. Crazy, right? And their market cap is $180 billion. Tesla's is $626 billion. I honestly think Tesla's going probably to $100 this year. $100 a share from $650 today. But yeah, I think this is, if you're looking for an automobile maker to bet on, this is the one in the space. Thanks for the call. I'm Justin Klein. This is another Invest Talk program. Steve Peasley and I thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which we post a new program each weekday shortly after the end of our live stream broadcast, which concludes at 5 p.m. Pacific time. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president and Justin Klein, chief executive officer of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial. And they thank you for listening and welcome your comments or questions on our 24-hour listening line at 888-99-CHART.